Right, so this is a podcast of a lecture that I am unfortunately unable to give in person because I'm in Japan. And for linear algebra, this is fall 2010, 124. All right, so let's get on with it. I'll try to keep this reasonably brief. I want you to be looking through, I'll send this in an email, but I want you to be looking through a PDF from online. There are three versions of it. There's a handout version if you want to print it out to keep it in your notes. There's a one called Slides, which is just the slides flattened out, so there are no little reveals. I'm going to be moving through the one-marked lecture, which is the third third PDF listed on the lectures part of the course website. All right, so very exciting. So some of this lecture was prepared 30,000 feet above Siberia, various other places. Okay, so I'll tell you which slide I'm on, and so we can hopefully keep things in sync. So I'm now looking at slide 2. You can see down in the bottom right hand corner of this set of slides, and of course you can pause this podcast at any point and rewind and go on, but down the bottom of the frames you'll see that there's it's 2 of 45 is what I have right now. So this is just a summary of the lecture. There's some motivation for these positive definite matrices, or this a particular kind of construction that we'll come across. What a PDM is, positive definite matrix. We'll also talk about semi-positive definite matrices. I know that's exciting for you. We'll talk about how to identify them. So that's a really crucial aspect here. That's the sort of thing you'll be asked about in the 10th assignment and in the final exam. We'll talk about how completing the square, good old completing the square, which maybe you can dig out in your memory, is the same as Gaussian elimination from the first 4 weeks of the course. We'll talk about principal axis, the principal axis theorem. That is a rather beautiful way of dealing with quadratic equations that represent things like ellipses and hyperbole, and seeing how diagonalization, a good friend diagonalization, makes all of that stuff beautifully transparent. Hopefully there'll be a nutshell, so it's a summary of everything, and there's some optional material which, if you're really keen, you can look at too. So some stuff I've just axed from the lecture. All right, so if you pop forward, there's a little guide that's telling you which section you're up to. That's page 3, so page 4. So I'll go through a couple of example motivational problems. So here's a function, so it's 2x1 squared, this is page 4, minus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 all squared. Right, so that's some surface in three dimensions, right? So z is x1, x2, if you like x and y, you can think of this as x and y. And so the next reveal gives you the three main possibilities, that we could have a minimum, a global minimum at 0. So you can see that that function has to be 0 when x1 and x2 are 0. It could be that we have a global maximum, or it could be a saddle, as humorously represented here on the right. Right, so in one direction on the saddle, it looks like a minimum. In another direction, it looks like a maximum. And so if you're climbing a mountain and you go the wrong way, you fall down the side. That is bad. All right. Okay, so you've probably seen these things in calculus if you've had the enjoyment of calculus. I'm sure you have. So these are extrema, and usually in calculus, there'll be something involving a couple of derivatives. There'll be some horrible things. There usually will be a matrix, a determinant-like structure, and we'll see how that pops up very naturally here. So we should, of course, be using linear algebra. So that's the last line there on that slide, and that's what we will do. All right, so we can rewrite this very interestingly, and I'll show you how to do this properly, but I'm just going to state it here on this fifth slide. There it is. So again, it's 2x1 squared minus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 squared. We can rewrite in this very special form. So you'll see there's a row vector, x1, x2, and then there's the matrix A. It's a 2x2, 2 minus 1 minus 1, 2. And then that same x vector again, but now as a column vector. So we can write that succinctly as x transpose ax. You'll notice something very sneaky about a is that it's symmetric. show you that we have some choice in doing that, but we love symmetry, so we'll choose symmetric A's to make these quadratic forms. And you can see, so it's a 1x2 multiplying a 2x2 multiplying a 2x1. So all the 2's in the middle match up, so we end up with a 1x1. This is really a number. X transpose A, X is really just a single quantity, right? It's a 1x1, if you like. F, if you like, is your Z, so that makes sense. So that's very interesting. We should be able to do something with this, right, with eigenvalues and pivots and so on. What we're going to see in this particular lecture is that almost everything we've come across so far will be involved in a really nice way. So what about that? So here's the second problem. So now we're on page 6. This is a curve. So this is different to before. We had a surface. It was a function of x1 and x2. Here we have a constrained equation. So it's x2x1 squared, so it's a bit different, plus 2x1x2 plus 2x2 squared equals 1. So this puts a constraint on x1 and x2, and it's a curve of some sort in two dimensions, right? There's no third dimension anymore. This is just x1, x2. So slightly different problem. But that's the same kind of form, so we'll rewrite this in the same way. Now we have 1, right? So we're going to say 1 is equal to this product of three matrices, so a row vector, a 2x2, and a column vector. And the matrix A is now 2, 1, 1, 2. So we have to work out how we get that matrix and how we can go back and forth between those two forms. I'm just telling you that this is true at the moment. So again, this X transpose AX appears. So here's a goal. Revealing one more piece. So you can just page through to get these reveals. We want to understand how this A, this symmetric A, dictates how these forms behave, these X transpose A X's behave, and that should tell us about these, in particular these two examples, but there are lots of other cases where this form appears, X transpose A X. And as I said, so the last line here just summarizes that again. Row reduction will be involved, pivots, eigen stuff, symmetry, all involved. Really good. So, on to page 7. We are going to think about a 2x2 example in general. So it's a symmetric matrix, A, B, B, C. And let's look at what X transpose A, X is for that guy. So X1, X2, so the second line, put A, B, B, C in the middle there, and multiply the column vector X1, X2. So we'll just do the product of A and the row, the column vector. So you get an AX1 plus BX2, BX1 plus CX2, and then we have to do one more product, right? So now we have a row and a column vector. We just do that dot product. So if you go through the next line, you'll see that you get there are two steps there. One is just x1 times the first piece, then x2 times the second piece. And if we start rearranging things and combining them, there's an x1, x2 term and an x2, x1 term, if you like. And of course, that's the same thing. So we can flip them. Both of them have a b attached to them. So we end up with a x1 squared plus 2b x1, x2 plus c x2 squared. So you might want to just pause and make sure you understand that piece. probably wish you had a pause or a delete button in lectures. Okay, so you can see how look back at the original matrix A, B, B, C, and see what the last line is there. We have AX1 squared, so the 1-1 entry in A ended up with X1 times X1, that piece. The B, which is in the 1-2 and the 2-1 location, ends up with X1, X2, X2, X1, they combine to put 2B term. And the C, which was in the 2-2 position of A, the matrix A ends up attached to the x2 times x2 piece. So we're going to move on to the next slide. And all right, so let's see. We have, here's our 2x2 example. So we started with x transpose AX with a general symmetric 2x2. So in the box here, you can see where we ended up. AX1 squared, there's plus 2b, and then a plus c part. So let's go back to our first example, and we could see now we could we can start with the quadratic and we could build out A easily enough. So we had the terms there are 2 minus 2 plus 2, the prefactors. So we can see, if you look at the expression in the box, then we can say we can identify A as 2, B is minus 1, right? We have to divide by 2 there to get the, because it's a 2B. Right? So 2B is minus 2, so therefore B is just minus 1, and C equals 2. So from that we can build our A matrix. So we can rewrite this F function as 2 minus 1, minus 1, 2. Okay, good. So the second example, same kind of thing. You can see that there. So you might want to stop and just make sure you understand the second one. Okay, here's a 3x3 example. This is page 9. You want to write a general symmetric matrix, so I've just chosen various letters here. ABC across the top, so that means we have to have ABC going down the first column. D is in the middle, so there's an E which is mirrored across the 2, 3, and 3, 2 position, and an F. So if we write everything out, and I'll skip, you know, all the gory details, you end up with the A, D, and F on the diagonal of A. They get attached to the pure squares, x1 squared, x2 squared, and x3 squared, and the B and the C and the E all get attached to the cross terms. Right? So you can see how these things distribute. And so let's move on to understanding this generally. So this is page 10. So if we start off with, and so you can kind of skip through this, but if we start with matrix multiplication, you don't need to skip through this. This is good. X transpose AX. So we're going to write it out for an M by N. So let's write down, let's think about the first part of the product. So we'll have the row vector multiplying AX. So it's the ith entry of each of those guys. We sum from I equals 1 to N. Then we can replace the product AX. It needs its own sum. So the ith term of A times X is that next piece, the sum from J equals 1 to N of AIJ XJ. Then we can pull the sums out the front. So now we have sum from I equals 1 to N, sum from J equals 1 to N. And that's it. So we see AIJ XI XJ. So they're the kind of terms we get. So you can see when I equals, well, let's see. So that if you go now down through the list of itemized statements after it, we have what I just said. So the on-diagonal terms turn out to be, for example, A77, X7 squared, A33, X3 squared. There's only one part of A that contributes to the on-diagonal, to the pure squares. But the off-diagonal ones combine, as there are pairs of them. So X1, X3, and X3, X1 are the same thing, so we combine their prefactors, and they add up, just as we had that 2B in the middle of the term before. All right, now we could actually do what we want then in building an A. Given an F, some horrible quadratic, we could build our A in any way we want as long as we get the right F. So if we had, say, a 23 X1 X3 term, we could divide that 23 between A1 and A31. So as an example, 36 minus 13 would work. But we choose symmetry, so we choose 11.5 for each of them because symmetry is really good. Okay, we know that we get all sorts of nice things. We get a complete set of orthogonal eigenvectors, and that will be a big deal. And we can always diagonalize as a result, and we get Q lambda Q transpose. We get a transpose because the inverse is so simple. All right. So on to page 11. Let's see how we're doing. 14 minutes. So let's just summarize what's happened. So we've seen that this piece, X transpose AX, appears quite a bit. We have this statement that it's a 1 by 1. Now here's an observation. So if we take an eigen, so this is 0.4, if we take a vector V, that's an eigenvector of A, and so we have AV equals lambda V, let's put it in, let's replace X by that V and see what happens. So we have V transpose AV. And as you move across that line in 0.4, you see, well, we have AV, we can replace that with lambda V. We'll just pull the lambda out. So it's lambda times V transpose V. So this is the beauty of eigenvalues, eigenvectors, right? That replaces the way A behaves in a very simple fashion. So we see we get lambda v squared. So that's something interesting. So if lambda is greater than 0, then this little construction, v transpose av, will always be greater than 0. Right? Because given the eigenvector is not 0, or that vector is not 0. So if we know something about the eigenvectors of A, then, and the eigenvaries, we should be able to say something about x transpose ax. And so that's indeed where we go. So this is the next section, what a PDM is, a positive definite matrix. And so here are some definitions, and we're going to connect them together. I'll give you the definitions now. So it's, our motivation is done. We're on to definitions. So a positive definite matrix is a real symmetric matrix, so A equals A transpose, with positive eigenvalues, meaning that all eigenvalues, each eigenvalue is greater than 0. We also talk about semi-positive definite matrices. These ones are not really sure about themselves, but kind of sure. They are, you may have eigenvalues that are equal to 0. And so that will actually be relevant to our singular value decomposition business. So we're not sure what to do with matrices. Well, they're okay, but they're a little messier and sneakier and so on. If some of the eigenvalues are greater or less than 0, we'll be happy with that. But we're pretty excited about the situations where everything's greater than 0. Or perhaps equal to 0. So this is moving on to frame 14 or slide 14. Another definition which we'll show is equivalent. So the first one is just about eigenvalues. Now we change it. We require that A is symmetric still, so equals A transpose. So again, this is slide 14. It's a positive definite matrix. A will be positive definite if you can run this test, X transpose A X, this funny construction, if that's greater than 0 for every X not equal to 0. So it's like the minimum for F that we started with that example. And semi-positive definite matrices have a similar kind of generalized definition. It's just that now it's greater than or equal to 0. And that's for any X. Yeah. X equals 0 obviously can be included. So how do we connect these definitions? And So we're on to slide 15. Now let's recall the spectral theorem. This is what we're excited about. We're excited about symmetric matrices. So that's what we've constructed. So we have this rather beautiful result. We can always diagonalize them, and we always get a complete set of eigenvectors that form an orthogonal basis for R. So A is Q lambda Q transpose, where of course the inverse of Q is just Q transpose, and there you can see in front of you there what Q is. Q is all the eigenvectors stacked up, and lambda is of course the diagonal matrix that we know is really what A is in some sense. Okay, so we're going to use that. We'll also be using LDL transpose, but we'll come to that later on. So that's the pivot story, right? The LDU type decomposition for symmetric matrices is really LDL transpose. We'll come back to that. All right, so we're under frame 16, and we want to understand this form, X transpose AX proper. So we're going to substitute A equals Q lambda Q transpose, because we can, because we know it's a symmetric matrix, a real symmetric matrix. And then we'll mess around with that. So let's stick that in. So it's the first line, we start to reveal pieces we see. All right, so now it's X transpose Q lambda Q transpose X. As you go across that line, you see we can do some sneaky things. So we can group so what's happened in the second part there is we've regrouped things. So we're going to multiply X transpose Q first, and then multiply lambda, and then we'll also do the Q transpose X. So that's the middle piece. But we see in there one of our naughty tricks that we usually get up to. We could replace the left-hand side with Q transpose X, that left-hand term, all transposed. Often a better way to do these things. All right, so that looks like a row vector multiplying a square matrix multiplying a column vector. Now it's a really simple story because lambda is in the middle. So, in fact, so we know that Q, because it's an orthogonal matrix, we're really just transforming bases. We're actually transforming from a natural basis to a eigenvector basis. And right, that's right. And then we can we'll call this representation Y. So Y equals Q transpose X. So this simplifies things terrifically. So now we're in the middle of this slide. So X transpose AX, we rewrite as Y transpose big lambda Y. That's really simple. And there it is written out in full. So we have a row vector of Ys, we have a column vector of Ys, and in the middle, just lambdas. And so if you go through and multiply that out, it's very simple. You end up with the last line on this frame. So it's lambda 1 times Y1 squared plus lambda 2 times Y2 squared plus. Okay, so this is terrific. Now we have a really simple expression for X transpose AX. We can see it just as a nice sum. But what we've had to do is, and this is a crazy thing, right? We had to go to A, and we had to find its eigenvectors and eigenvalues, and now we have the right basis, if you like. That's exactly what's happened. We've chosen the right basis, and this product in that basis is much more simple. So there are no cross terms anymore. Right. So what we're going to do is take these quadratic forms and remove all the cross terms by transforming to the right basis. That's really what's going to go on. And then we'll be able to see if it's an ellipse or a hyperbola. That's the case of the second example. We'll be able to see if it's a minimum or a maximum or a saddle in the first example. And of course, there are more general problems, but ones we're looking at. Okay, so if you go to slide 17... It's just reproducing, the first line reproduces the result from the previous slide. So we can see that whether this quantity, X transpose AX, is positive or not, it depends purely on those lambdas. Right? So all the Ys are squared, Y1 squared, Y2 squared, Yn squared. So it's really about how the lambdas behave, what the values of the lambdas. So if we want a positive definite matrix, then we have to have all of them being exceeding zero. It'll be semi-positive definite if some of them are zero, possibly zero. So that is good news. So I think we've connected those two pieces reasonably well. So let's go on to slide 18. And as I said, we were going to think about the other major factorization of A that we have, LDL transpose, which we can do, it's special, instead of LDU, we know it's LDL transpose when A is symmetric. So same kind of game that we play with Q lambda Q, we'll stick that in, we'll regroup things. So this is the second line, again on slide 18. You see that on the last part of that, we end up with this L transpose X, all transpose, we do one of our sneaky little fudges there. And then D, which is the pivot matrix in the middle, it's again a diagonal matrix. You'll see that this slide is very similar to the one two slides before. It's not. It's a bit different now, though, from the eigenvalue approach, because there we really changed to a different basis. Here we're not changing bases so much. We're just messing with it. We're just right. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's not as clear as changing to a nice new orthogonal basis. We're taking X, we're multiplying it by L transpose, and we'll call that Z and mess things up. But we still get that same kind of form, right? X transpose AX is Z transpose DZ. So again, there you go. There's a nice big pivot matrix with the pivots running down the diagonal, and a row and column vector wrapping around the outside of Zs. And so we end up with that same form. And again, so we can see the pivots have the same story as the eigenvalues. Right? So that's frame 19. Again, it's the same story as we had for eigenvalues, deliberately reproduced in a similar fashion. So it depends on whether the pivots are positive enough or not, the D sub I's. So the result is that PDMs have to have all their pivots exceeding zero, and if they're semi-positive definite, then they'd have to have the possibility that some might be zero. Okay, so So we can go these two ways. They're very different, right? Eigenvalues and eigenvectors, it's a very different story. It's something about AX equals lambda X or AV equals lambda V. It's a very different thing to solving AX equals B. They're just really different problems. We get pivots out of one of them. We get eigenvalues out of the other. They match up in certain very funny ways. One is that the one main one is that the product of them gives you the determinant of the matrix, plus or minus in the case of the pivots, and I'll show you that again. But here we're going to see something extra. All right, so before we do that, we'll get to understanding our first problem a little more. So slide 20, so there's that picture again. We're going to think about this generally. So imagine we have ax squared plus 2bxy plus cy squared, and the question is, you know, is this a minimum, maximum, or saddle? So if we think about eigenvalues, well, so now it's clear that if we could do this diagonalization and restructure things so that we ended up with an AU1 squared, I guess I call it Y, so lambda 1 times Y1 squared plus lambda 2, Y2 squared, and so on, then it would be transparent to us whether it's a saddle or not. So if both eigenvalues are greater than zero for the A that we have of this quadratic form, then we have a minimum, right? So that means that F is growing as you move away from zero. It's a maximum if both eigenvalues are less than zero. So it's a negative definite matrix, if you like. And it's a saddle if one eigenvalue is positive and the other one is negative. Right, so on to slide 21, let's go back to the specific example. We were looking for the maximum minimum saddle story. So it was 2x1 squared minus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 squared. We figured out that we could write that in this form with 2 minus 1 minus 1, 2 being the A matrix. So what we do is we compute the eigenvalues. We're not going to do that, but I'll tell you what they are. There's plus 3 and plus 1 up here. So F is a minimum. Right. From the eigenvalues, we can tell that. So here's a general problem. Given some A, how do we tell what the signs are? And the problem is, in general, that eigenvalues are, finding all eigenvalues is a business. I mean, sometimes it's what we have to do. We really are after eigenvalues. But here, it's not the first thing we're after. So we've seen that clearly we could go for pivots as well. And so while the eigenvalues are more of a meaningful story, the directions are the things that matter and so on, what we'll find out is that finding the pivots gives us the same result. And that will be a big deal. All right. So this is something you should be able to do. So now we're on to, so this is a quick section change on slide 22, slide 23. So we're on to how to identify PDM. So this is good stuff. All right. So there's a statement at the top that repeats the totally amazing fact that symmetric matrices, of course, if they're real, have real eigenvalues. And orthogonal eigenvectors that form a basis for Rn. And the next piece we're going to add, so the next bullet there, if you like, is that we're interested in is the signs of the eigenvalues. So not the actual values, but just the signs. The signs will matter. So here are three example matrices that are test examples. And let me get that right. So you'll see the first one, 2 minus 1 minus 1, 2, is the matrix we started with in the very first example. And then the others, all I'm doing is just changing the sign a few times to give you some examples. So the last one's they're all negatives, so you can guess that one's going to be a negative definite matrix, if you like, right? I mean, everything is negative. The middle one is a bit peculiar. We're not sure about that either. So a little bit of struggling, and we'll find out that, as we did before, that the eigenvalues for the first guy is 3 and 1, so it's a PDM. We get plus and minus root 5 for the second example, so it's sad, and we get minus 1 and minus 3 for the last one, so definitely sad. So it's a little bit hard straight away to tell, right, certainly from a matrix A, it may have positive and negative numbers sitting inside it, as A1 does, for example, so does A2, it has a few more, but it's not clear what the values of the eigenvalues will be, what the signs will be. All right. So, as I said, it takes a bit of effort to find out the eigenvalues. We want a better way. let's move on to slide 24, and this is the better way. So it's a very sneaky result. In fact, classified as an extremely sneaky one for linear algebra. So if we have a symmetric matrix that has real entries, then the number of positive eigenvalues is equal to the number of positive pivots, the number of negative ones is equal, eigenvalues is equal to the number of negative pivots, and the number of zero eigenvalues is equal to the number of zero pivots. Rather outrageous. So, as I said before, we knew that the determinant, the value of the determinant of A matched up with the product of the eigenvalues, which matched up with the product of the pivots, plus or minus depending on row swaps and finding the pivots. If we add that A is symmetric, then we get this extra piece, right? This is only for symmetric matrices. And as I said before, eigenvalues and pivots come from very different parts of problems in linear algebra. And then we have this very odd, beautiful connection, bridging them across. All right, so we're on to slide 25. So this is a very exciting result because pivots are much, much easier to calculate. So we have possibly balloons and streamers coming out of the ceiling at this point. That might not be happening in your particular location. Let's see. So, certainly happening here. For our three examples, let's have a look. So, A1, the pivots are, you know, so this computation, we're not going to do it. I'm just going to tell you what they are. The 2 and 3 halves. 2 and minus 5 halves for A2. So, they're matching up. Positive, positive for the first one. Positive, negative for the second one. Negative, negative. So the third one. Very, very nice. All right, so that's just a couple of examples, but we need to prove it in general. So let's think about 2x2s to start with, and then we'll see how this should work for n by n. So the next four slides give us a proof of that, this result, right, that the signs of the eigenvalues and pivots match up. And then we've got a couple more pieces to finish off, just some more examples. Completing the square and Gaussian elimination, how those things match up, and the principal axis theorem, which is quite a beautiful thing. All right. So let's have a look at this. So let's take A2. So that was 2 minus 1 minus 1 minus 2. We're on slide 26, and we had the eigenvalues were plus or minus root 5. So let's see how they match, at least for this particular example. It'll give us an idea of how to do it in general. So we'll take the LU decomposition. Again, you know, this is something you guys could do. So the L is 1, 0, minus 1/2, 1. So that's that minus 1/2 is multiply L2, 1. Little curly L2, 1. Now, so it's symmetric, so we'll, of course, want to go further. We'll write LDL transpose. So DL transpose replaces U. So the pivot matrix in the middle is 2 minus 5 halves on the diagonal. Zero. So this is again slide 26, and you'll see that there's L and L transpose sitting around that. So that's A2. All right, fine. So let's go to slide 27, and what we're going to think about. So it's just repeated that expression for A2. We're going to think about another matrix. Let's call it B, and we'll give it a variable L2, 1. So it looks just like A2, but we've replaced that minus 1/2 in the L matrix with little curly L2, 1. Put a minus 1/2, then so that's the next line. If we put a minus 1/2 back in there, we get that B, as a function of minus 1/2, is this original matrix, A2, which was the second of our three examples, A1, A2, A3. All right, so what happens, though, for these B matrices as we dial L2, 1 from minus 1/2, which is our original matrix, to 0? Well, when we get to 0, this is the last line of slide 27, we have, if you look the definition of B, a couple of steps up, L2, 1 goes to 0, so then we just have the identity sitting there for L and L transpose. Right? So the identity just gets absorbed, and we just have that B at 0 is really just the pivot matrix. So if you compute the eigenvalues of this guy, what are the eigenvalues for this matrix? Well, it's diagonal, so the eigenvalues are entries on the diagonal themselves. I'll think about that for a little bit. So, for diagonal matrices, the pivots and the eigenvalues are exactly the same things. Right, so that's crucial. So we've taken this matrix A2, we've slowly changed it into another matrix where the pivots and the eigenvalues are now the same thing. And we have to think about what happens as we change that matrix. So as we move to this much simpler diagonal matrix, the one thing we're not changing actually are the pivots, right? Because we've always got an LDL transpose type form for B. We're just changing that multiplier. We're never changing the pivots. They're always the same. That's a really crucial thing. So we never change the pivots. And if you multiply the pivots together, you get the determinant, plus or minus in general. But let's multiply them together. It's 2 times minus 5 halves, so we get minus 5. So the determinant's not changing. So here's the last step. If the determinant's not changing, then the product of the eigenvalues has to stay the same because it's also the determinant. So that means the eigenvalues, while they may be changing, and indeed they are changing. They were plus or minus root 5, and they end up as 2 and minus 5 halves. They're changing, but their product has to be the same, right? Root 5 times minus root 5 is 5. 2 times minus 5 halves is 5. As the eigenvalues change, right, root 5 moves towards 2, and minus root 5 moves towards minus 5 halves, their product is always equal to minus 5. And then the crucial thing to understand here to see next is that if the determinant is always minus 5, then the eigenvalues can never be 0, right, as you're dialing this little L21, the multiplier around. It can never be 0. So you may have to think about this again. The next slide, we'll go through it again. Can never be 0. Right, so here it is. If you go to slide 28, everything I've said is pretty much there. Right, so eigenvalues and pivots are the same for P0. They're the same thing as the diagonal matrix. Everything I've said is there. So you might want to read through this one. So the eigenvalues can't become 0, so they can't change sign, right? If they change sign, if they move smoothly and change sign, they would have to go through 0. So they can't change sign. And we know, so here's the next piece, because we know that the pivots and the eigenvalues of B of 0 are the same. They are, of course, they're the same. They have the same signs. So as you dial L21 out to minus a half, to retrieve A21, while the eigenvalues are changing now, their signs can't change. Right? They can't go through 0. So, you may have to listen to this again. We have some trouble, of course, if some of the pivots are 0 and equivalent the eigenvalues are 0. We can fix that and we can deal with that. But there's some extra magic involved. Okay, so signs of pivots and eigenvalues match up, and whether they're 0 or not matches up. Frame 21, slide 21, has the more general argument for n by n's. I'm not going to go through it. It's there for completeness. But it's the same idea. Basically, you just gradually change the L matrix into the identity, and as a result, see that the eigenvalues can't cross 0. So we move on to the last two sections, which are more examples, dealing with those examples we started with. And we see some other crazy things happen as well. So the first thing is that completeness square is in some ways equivalent to Gaussian elimination. So let's have a look at this. It should be done in an hour, I think. All right, so let's take our first example again. So we figured out that this guy was a minimum. So there's a little bit of algebra here. 2x1 squared minus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 squared. So you probably haven't seen this, but imagine you were given x squared plus 4x plus 7, and you were asked to complete the square. So that's the sort of thing, right? And you'd write x plus 2 all squared minus 4 plus 7. We'd be able to do it. But it may be a bit of a distant memory, so you have to think about it. So let's see. Let's just sort of pretend the x2 squared is a number at the moment. We want to complete the square on the x1 part. So the second line here, we start to do this, right? We pull a 2 out of the front. We get the x anything that has an x1 together. And so there'll be an x1 squared minus x1. X1 times x2. And then in the next part, in red, you'll see we're adding and subtracting a quarter of x2 squared. So that makes the first three terms in the big bracket a perfect square. Right, and that's what happens over the next line. You see that we can, and we gather, we take that fourth term, the minus a quarter x2 squared over, and we subtract it from the 2x2 squared. So we end up with 2. This is the end of all of that algebra, 2. There's an x1 minus a half x2, all squared. And then there's plus 3 halves and x2 squared. So what is going on here? We've seen these numbers so far. They are, in fact, the pivots. 2 is d1. 3 halves is d2. And L21 is there as well, minus a half. Right? So this is all the stuff from row reduction pops out in this fairly natural thing that we've used in other areas of completing the square. And I'm claiming it's super cool. You might not think that. This is exactly what we saw before, really, when we said x transpose ax is equal to, we replaced a with l, d, l transpose, and we showed that you end up with d1 times y1 squared plus d2 times y2 squared. Same story, right? So, but if you think about, we go back, look, f, we've rearranged f. To start with, f had a minus 2x1, x2, and we're a little unsure about that guy. But rewritten in this way, by the end of all that algebra, we see it's 2 times some blob squared plus 3 halves sometimes blob, some blob squared. So it's clearly a minimum. Right, there's no way. This is a positive number. As x1 and x2 move away from 0, it has to grow. And that's the last statement. So the minimum, the fact that it's a minimum is now obvious. It's a sum of squares. Be rather amazing. The next slide, 32, shows what happens if we take the matrix A2, which was 2 minus 1 minus 1 minus 2 instead of a plus 2 there. We complete the square on this little beast, same procedure. You'll see L21 appears. It's again minus a half. And the pivots are now 2 and minus 5 halves. So again, that's clear that that's no longer a minimum. And it has a saddle type structure. One of the pivots is positive. The other one is negative. So very cool. All right, so we're on to our last piece, which is the principal axis theorem. Hopefully you will see this is a very, very nice application of diagonalization. Quite beautiful. Right, we are on slide 34. So we have four slides here to finish off this lecture. Last part, as I said, principal axis theorem. All right, so this was the second problem we had. We were talking about this relatively simple looking equation. It's a quadratic, 2x1 squared plus 2x1x2 plus 2x2 squared. So if you like, it's 2x squared plus 2xy plus 2y squared equals 1. So that's an expression involving x1s and x2s that constrains them, and we should be able to plot on the x1, x2 plane the curve that this corresponds to. And if you've seen these things before, you'll know this is either an ellipse, right, some kind of a messed up circle, or maybe a hyperbola. Now, let's see. So the claim is here that this will be an ellipse. So let's find out. We can rewrite the equation as we did before, with the matrix A being 2, 1, 1, 2 in the x transpose AX equals 1 equation. And we'll replace that matrix by its spectral decomposition form. And I won't do all the details, go through all the details of finding the eigenvectors, but the eigenvalues are 3 and 1. We want to use the normalized eigenvectors. So this should be right. So q lambda q transpose. right. So we see the last line there. We have a is 2, 1, 1, 2. We're going to replace that by q lambda q transpose. So we'll see that, so 3, 1, 3 and 1, that's the eigenvalues for A. So we get the diagonal matrix of 3, 0, 0, 1. And then you can see the eigenvectors fitting into Q and Q transpose. So in this case, we have that the Q and Q transpose are the same. It just turns out that that's the case. But in general, they're not identical. They're simply transposes. All right. So, onto slide 35, we're going to replace this whole expression, at this equation, 2x1 squared plus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 squared equals 1, using this diagonalization. So if you see, if you move down through these few lines, then we'll leave the diagonal matrix in the middle, and then we'll compute the rest of the products. And so what you see is you get these this transformation of the x variables. And we'll leave those things grouped together, so you can see these horrible things, x1 plus x2 over root 2. There's an x1 minus x2 over root 2 as well. And then we'll multiply through and pick up the squares of those pieces attached to the 3 and the 1, the eigenvalues of the 3 and the 1 again. So that's the last line there. You see 3 times a blob squared plus what is really 1 times another blob squared equals 1. So this is the same equation that we started with. If you multiply everything out, you get the same equation again. It's just grouped together in a much cleaner way. Might look a little messy, but that's really 3 times a blob squared plus 1 times a blob squared equals 1. And so we know that's an equation of an ellipse. So if we go to the next slide, so it's 36, and we think about what Q transpose is doing, it's changing from the changing to the eigenvector coordinate system from the natural basis. So we have a point in space represented by x1, x2 in the natural basis, the normal I hat, j hat basis, multiplied by Q transpose. That gives us what we'll call u1, u2. That's the same point, but now represented in the eigenvector basis. The eigenvectors here are 1, 1, 1, minus 1. And then, so if we think about these new variables, then our equation's much simpler. It's simply 3 u1 squared plus 1 times u2 squared equals 1. So that's an ellipse, and this is reflective of A being a positive definite matrix. The eigenvalues are sitting there, the 3 and the 1, they're both positive. That gives us an ellipse. So if one of them was negative, we'd have a hyperbola. If they were both negative, we would have something that didn't work for real numbers. Anyway, so on to the last slide here. We're going to draw a picture of this. I think U2 is pointing in the wrong direction. But basically, this is the right idea. So we have U1 represents the 1-1 direction. U2 represents the 1-1 direction. The ellipse, then, they're the axes we need to put in. Right angles to each other. We expect that because A is a symmetric matrix, so the eigenvectors are orthogonal. We can sketch in a nice ellipse positioned appropriately and figure out the intercepts, right? So it doesn't take too much work. Just set U2 to 0 and U1 to 0. So if we set U2 to 0, then we get U1 is plus or minus 1 over root 3. And U2 is plus or minus 1. So they're the intercepts. Right, so it's a squashed football-y thing. Tilted up to the left. So you can see how this is going to work, hopefully, in higher dimensions. This is terrific for you. But we took a kind of a nasty-looking thing and we cleaned it up and made it a much nicer problem. All right, so here's a summary, a nutshell. Now we're on slide 39. Right, so here are the points, the main points of this lecture. We had X transpose AX, it's something that appears. I gave you just two kinds of examples, but it does appear more generally. So we're excited about this structure, particularly where A is symmetric. And then there are a couple of pieces about A that are particularly useful to notice. So positive definiteness, and then whether or not it's semi-positive definite. Positive eigenvalues for A, purely positive, non-negative, including 0. That's a semi-positive definite. So that's the next point, next couple of points there. Let's see, so last few things. So how do we find the signs of the eigenvalues? Well, we can, of course, compute the eigenvalues, but it takes a lot of time generally. It's much easier to compute the pivots. We showed how they match up. Signs, it's a very beautiful story, connecting eigenvalues and pivots. we found this very odd thing, that Gaussian elimination is the same as completing the square. And the last point there is just an example of a couple of questions that, several questions that you might be asked. So, simply determine a matrix, whether a matrix is a PDM or an SPDM. Maybe convert a quadratic function into the form X transpose AX. Show that you understand how to go back and forth between those structures. Maybe sketch a quadratic curve just as we did in the last section. So that is it. That's 50 minutes for this little podcast. I hope you have learned something. And I've learned that I'm pretty tired. All right. So, okay. Very good. Bye-bye.